जय गोपी जन वाला भा जय गिरिवर धारे जय यशोदनंदन जय ब्रज जन रंजन
जय यशोरनंद
यमुना तीरवन छारे जय कुंज बिहारे जय यमुना तीरवन चारे जय कुंज बिहारे जय विष्णुपाद परमहंसा परिव्राजकाचार्य अश्वत्थ श्री श्रीमादि डिवाइन ग्रेस ऐसी भक्तिवंत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की गौर प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द श्री गुरु एंड श्री गौरांग ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्रील प्रभुपाद ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the 10th canto, chapter 23, starting from verse 15, going till 19. So I'll read the translations for 15, 16, 17, and 18, and then 19's on the board. The cowherd boys then went to the house where the brahmana's wives were staying. There the boys saw those chaste ladies sitting, nicely decorated with fine ornaments. Bowing down to the brahmana ladies, the boys addressed them in all humility. The cowherd boys said, "Obeisances unto you, O wives of the learned brahmins. Kindly hear our words. We have been sent here by Lord Krishna, who is passing by not far from here. He has come a long way with the cowherd boys and Lord Balaram, tending the cows. Now he is so hungry. So some food should be given for him and his companions." The wives of the Brahmins were always eager to see Krishna, for their minds had been enchanted by descriptions of him. Thus, as soon as they heard that he had come, they became very excited. Now today's verse, Chaturvidham bahu gunam annamadaya bhajanai Abhi sasru priyam sarvaha samudram ivanim nagaha. Should I like to repeat? Chaturvidham bahu gunam annama daya bhajanai Abhi sasru priyam sarvaha Samudram ivanim nagaha. Word for word, Chaturvidham. Of the four varieties, that which is chewed, that which is drunk, that which is licked, and that which is sucked. Bahugunam, endowed with many rich tastes and fragrances. Annam, food. Adaya, bringing. Bhajanai, in large vessels. Abhisasruhu, they went forward. Priyam, to their beloved. Sarvaha, all of them. Samudram, to the ocean. Eva, just as. Nimnagaha, the rivers. Translation by, and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace. Ki Jai. taking along in large vessels the four kinds of foods full of fine tastes and aromas. All the ladies went forth to meet their beloved, just as rivers flow towards the sea. Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that the wives of the Brahmins experienced conjugal feelings towards Krishna as if he were their paramour. Thus they could not be checked as they rushed to see him. Om Jnanatitimrandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Namo Maha Vadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauro Tushe Namaha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Joy. So, we are hearing about the wives of the yogic brahmanas. Since it's a small group, maybe just feel free to chime in and add things or just make it a discussion, you know. So we're hearing about these very exalted souls, these wives of these brahmanas who heard about Krishna from these women who used to sell flowers, actually. So basically what would happen is that these ladies who were coming to the forest to pluck flowers to sell in Vrindavan, would come into the forest to pick flowers. And while they were picking flowers, they would be talking about Krishna. And these wives who had never actually met Krishna, they heard from these young girls about Krishna and they became super attracted and charmed by his beauty and narrations of his pastimes and descriptions. And because they heard about him for a very long time, then they developed this kind of intense attraction to Krishna. So as soon as they heard that there was an opportunity to meet him, they spontaneously arose and left their homes. In fact, Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says in his commentary, he says, they are described as rivers flowing down naturally towards the ocean because they had heard for a long time about Krishna. And so this is the result of hearing about something for a long time is that you develop an attachment for it. Just like, you know, if I tell you about this particular skin cream that's like unbelievable and we talk about it for months and months and months, then when you see it at a store, even if it's like $500, you can't hold yourself back. You just like whip out your credit card and just buy it because, well, I've been talking about it for a really long time. And in essence, hearing is the principle for spiritual development, but it's also the principle for material degradation. Because we degrade ourselves materially by talking about the same things over and over and over again through social media and news outlets and things like that. We hear about the same kinds of like sense gratifications from so many different angles of vision that finally when we come in contact with the sense object, the mind has no resistance. The intelligence is completely weak. Why? Because the mind has developed an attachment. So in the Gita, when Krishna says the mind is the friend of the conditioned, the enemy of the conditioned soul, but can also be his friend, he's referring to this duality that the mind can exhibit. It can become attached to something, but it can also become very detached from something. And its attachment and detachment depends on what it hears. And when the mind develops an attachment for something, it's much stronger than the intelligence, actually. The intelligence cannot discriminate. The intelligence discriminates, but the mind is where taste lives. And so when one has a taste for something, then intelligence is weak in front of the mind's taste for something. Because remember, the mind is in the mode of goodness, so it actually is in the higher mode of nature. Although it seems like our minds are in the mode of passion, but actually, fundamentally, the mind is a mode of goodness creation. And therefore, when it develops a taste for something, it actually overwhelms even the intelligence. And hence, the whole process of spiritual life is to develop a taste for Krishna, because when that happens, that attachment to Krishna will no longer be an intellectual faculty or an intellectual process. It's something we have taste for. Just like, you know, when you see, like when we see pizza or something, you know, no one thinks like, oh my God, how many calories does this have? You know, we just go for it. So that's what's happening to the wives of the Brahmins. They've heard for so long that all the contamination of false ego was destroyed from their minds, and then an attachment to Krishna arose in their minds so intense that as soon as the opportunity to meet Krishna manifested itself, they left. So I thought I would just read, we could just read a few nice verses from the Shastras about the importance of hearing, and then we can just discuss them, you know. So this is the first verse I wanted to share. This is from the Bhagavad Gita. It's a very like basic, fundamental verse. But it comes to the 13th chapter, verse 26. Yeah, Krishna has been talking about the different elements of the material world, the nature of the cosmos and material energy and things like that. And then comes this verse, it's 13:26. Why don't we chant it together? We can have a Shastra jam. Let me know when you have it pulled up. Got it? Anye tvayam ajananta shrutvane bhya upasate te pichati tarantyeva mrityum shruti parayanaha. Want to read the translation? Oh, I grabbed the mic, yeah.
Again, there are those who, I don't know if this is working or not, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about him from others. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death.
Right, so the idea is some people acquire spiritual wisdom by reading books, but for most of us, in fact, Srila Prabhupada mentions this in the purport, for most of us, it's going to come through hearing. Just hearing from advanced souls, because by hearing from them, you know, their realizations also enter into our hearts. And by doing this for a long time, then Sambandha Gyan, which is this foundational knowledge of who am I as a spirit soul, what is the nature of this world, who is the source of everything, Krishna, that becomes established within the heart when you hear about it long enough. Hearing is what nourishes our faith, you know, our conviction in certain realities, because we haven't experienced that we're spirit souls, at least I haven't experienced it. So how do I become convinced of something that I'm yet to experience, right? It's just like in your line of work, if you're trying to sell a particular product to a customer, they haven't yet experienced its benefits. So what do? You glorify it. You're like, it has this, it has that. And guess what? 10 of my friends used it and they had this experience. That's literally what the Shastra is. The Shastra is saying, look, Dhruva Maharaj chanted, look at the result he got. Haridas Thakur chanted, look at the result he got. Why don't you chant? Look at the result you can get. So we haven't experienced the results yet, but then the Shastra contains examples of people who followed the process, attained enlightenment, and then so many logical arguments for why this makes sense to convince us to place faith in something that we have not yet experienced, right? Just like the wise, the Brahmins, they had not yet met Krishna, but by hearing about him, they'd already placed faith that actually meeting him is the perfection of our life. And therefore, when the opportunity came like that. Any comments on this?
Okay, this is working. I remember one little quote that Vaisheshika Prabhu said a long time ago, and it always stuck with me, was how I'm sure it's the case here in Chicago as well, but in California, you see like those storm drains. Mm. So when it's raining, and then it'll kind of like go into the sewer and stuff. But above the storm drain, it's painted above, or on the street level, it's or on the curb, it says, contents flow towards the sea. Mm. So it's like a warning for people not to dump garbage inside of this, because then whatever they put inside of it's going to flow towards the ocean.
Oh, here the lake, yeah.
And so in a similar way, that's kind of like the process of hearing. And whatever we hear, whether it's transcendental or whether it's material,
right.
It flows just towards the heart. So right. No matter what we do, it's going to go in. It reminds me of this one time, a long time ago, during Kartik, one of my you know vrats that I decided to do was go on a hearing fast. So for the whole month of Kartik, I didn't listen to any of my karmi music, and I would just listen to bhajans and stuff. So I tried to do that for the whole month, and I was pretty successful with it. And I noticed, like, I noticed a significant difference in just my attitude, my outlook on everything, like even like my sadhana that normally was more of kind of a chore to do, it was easier to do. I felt more inclined to do spiritual things and go to the temple, and then eventually got back into hearing my regular music and stuff. And then I noticed a difference in like my heart when I was just on a hearing fast, and it was significantly, you know, it improved. So
thanks for sharing that reflection, actually. And that's a really nice reflection, because It really shows you the potency in the hearing process, that it has a way of transforming our inner being. And if that's what everybody's looking for, is a happy inner state, then especially as practicing devotees, it would do us so well to hear more. Because, and you're right, actually, I did that one time. One time I remember I decided that I would, from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to bed, I would just keep my headphones in my ears, and I would just play like this Prabhupada radio that just plays his lectures continually. So if I wasn't chanting or talking to somebody, then I would just have that playing in my ear, literally from the moment I got up to the moment I went to bed. It was an awesome experience. It's really cool, and so I can resonate with what you're saying.
Actually, another thing that came to mind was Parma Karuna, when I was in the van with him.
Yeah.
And I was like in the passenger seat, and I had finished my rounds at that point. And so I was just kind of like staring out at the window, and I was just kind of like looking out at the scenery as we were driving by.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Oh, are you listening to any like classes or lectures right now?" Yeah. I was like, no, I'm just like spacing out, just like watching the scenery go by. And he was like, "Oh, if you're not listening, if you're not hearing, then you're speculating." Yeah. It's true. If I'm not hearing something, then my mind is just taking me everywhere. So
It's a valuable consideration, because Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his book Madhurya Kadamani, he describes the stages of elevation in bhakti. And so there's a stage called nishta, which means being fixed in devotional service. So what happens is at the stage of nishta and before, one's mind is stolen by material senses and material vibrations, and you don't even know it. But at the stage of ruchi and beyond, your mind gets stolen by Krishna and you don't even know it. Like, how did we arrive at a Krishna conscious thought? It just happens spontaneously when the mind has become so purified. So yeah, it's true. For those of us who are like haven't yet attained nishta, then we cannot trust our minds to take us to Krishna. We have to take it to Krishna by like some endeavor, by some force.
Mr. Vera, so while you're in the state of nishta, you still have that kind of like...
You still have that struggle. You still have that struggle. But it's at ruchi, when the mind specifically develops a taste for Krishna.
Because I was always under the impression that nishta meant like you were like fixed in like...
You're fixed in the principles and the practices.
Oh, but it doesn't come naturally.
It doesn't. But it's still, there's still an effort involved in trying to bring the mind to Krishna. But what nishta literally means is that the majority of your like karma is now destroyed. And you have become fixed in the principles of bhakti, and your bhajan cannot be interrupted by things like laziness or distraction. Like, you know how when we chant, if we feel like not chanting, we don't chant, you know. Or if we start thinking of some random thought on Wikipedia, I just put my job back down and start Googling it. So those kind of things don't happen in nishta, because you're like, I'm chanting Krishna's names, like I'm set in my practices. But then the mind still doesn't have a taste, you know. But then at ruchi, the mind actually has a taste now, so that it can actually just go to Krishna, and you don't even realize how that happened. You're like, I was trying not to think about Krishna. I was trying to think about work, but then like Krishna keeps popping into my head. So on this point about don't dump things here, they flow into the sea. There's a very famous verse from the first canto, which is like a quintessential verse about things flowing to oceans. It's a very beautiful verse by Queen Kunti's prayers. If you want to pull it out, we can chant it together. And it's the first canto, chapter 8, verse 42. And Queen Kunti here, it's a very emotional scene. The Lord is leaving Hastinapur after having spent significant time with the Pandavas after they were coronated as emperors of the world. And out of love and affection for the Pandavas, the Lord wanted to stay with them for some time. And then as he was leaving, it was a very, very emotional scene. It's described how all the personalities in Hastinapur had come outside to kind of say goodbye to the Lord. And everybody was very tearful and everybody was very sad. Just like, I go every year for my Guru Maharaj's Vyasa Puja in Germany, and it's really sweet. Like, there's a ceremony for when he first arrives on the project, and we're all there doing kirtan, and we're greeting him with flowers, and he'll get out of the car, he'll say a few words. And then when he leaves, there's also a bit of a ceremony. We're all there singing and saying goodbye to him. So it's just the nature of when you have love for somebody, that you seeing them and saying goodbye to them is always an emotional experience. Like, I remember, it's a quick side story. I was a kid. I went to boarding school for 2 years. And so one year, my brother, who was already now in college in America, happened to be in India when I was going back to boarding school from our hometown by train. It's a 2-day train journey all the way to Bangalore. And so he came with me to the train station to see me off. And so as the train was leaving the platform, he walked next to the train, and he ran actually up until the platform ended, you know, like just to say goodbye, and then he like kept waving. Actually, he stood there, I remember, until I couldn't see him anymore, you know. It was very sweet. My brother was really attached to me. Anyway, so this is the scene. Krishna is leaving, and all the residents of Hastinapur who are so attached to Krishna are now saying their goodbyes, and the most prominent goodbyes are offered by Queen Kunti. She offers these wonderful prayers. And this is one of her prayers. It's a very famous verse. It's actually quoted by Radhanath Swami at the beginning of the journey home. You have it pulled up. Tvai minanya vishaya matir madhupate sakrit ratim mudvahata dadha gange vogham udanvati. Translation.
O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else.
What a beautiful verse. The idea is, you know, the water comes out of the ocean and there's already a path. The water doesn't stop to think, should I take a left or a right? Imagine going all the way from the Himalayas to the Bay of Bengal, which is where the Ganges ends. It's such a long distance. And the river has a natural course. It doesn't have to, doesn't get lost or anything like that. It doesn't end up in like another ocean or someone's house. It flows to the sea. It's just, that's the only place where it goes. So in the same way, Queen Kunti is praying, let my heart's attraction go only towards you. Let it not be distracted by thoughts of the world or worldly concerns. Let it flow towards you. Let's read a little bit of just the first paragraph of the purport. It's so beautiful. Would you like to read it? Just the first paragraph, yeah.
Purport. Perfection of pure devotional service is attained when all attention is diverted towards the transcendental loving service of the Lord. To cut off the tie of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements, like affection for someone else. This is not possible. A living being, whoever he may be, must have this feeling of affection for others because this is a symptom of life. The symptoms of life, such as desire, anger, hankerings, feelings of attraction, etc., cannot be annihilated. Only the objective has to be changed. Desire cannot be negated, but in devotional service, the desire is changed only for the service of the Lord in place of desire for sense gratification. The so-called affection for family, society, country, etc., consists of different phases of sense gratification. When this desire is changed for the satisfaction of the Lord, it is called devotional service.
Right, so Srila Prabhupada is saying that we cannot, it's completely natural to feel affection. And we cannot just artificially become stones and not have affection. But it's a very subtle point. Right now, when we make considerations in our life, we think, what's going to work out well for me? Right, like if I have to choose between, say, like making this much money or making that much money, or working here or working there, my consideration of, well, what's going to work for me, what's going to make me happy, right? And so that tendency to want to benefit somebody is there. The objective has to be changed. So then in making that decision, okay, well, if I do this job, will Krishna be happy? Or if I do that job, will Krishna be happy? What's going to satisfy Krishna? So that's what this verse is recommending, that we cannot, but we cannot just be like, well, I shouldn't discriminate between this or that. No, that tendency to discriminate will always be there. The tendency to want to benefit somebody, to like create a profit from our activities, that tendency cannot go away. But who is that profit meant for? Who is that, like, who is that pleasure, the satisfaction meant for? That objective can be changed. So very beautifully Prabhupada is writing here. And then let's just read the second paragraph also. It's such a beautiful verse. Let's read the second paragraph as well. Yeah. You want to? Great.
In the Bhagavad Gita, we can see that Arjuna desired not to fight with his brothers and relations just to satisfy his own personal desires. But when he heard the message of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, he changed his decision and served the Lord. And for his doing so, he became a famous devotee of the Lord. For it is declared in all the scriptures that Arjuna attained spiritual perfection by devotional service to the Lord and friendship. The fighting was there, the friendship was there, Arjuna was there and Krishna was there, but Arjuna became a different person by devotional service. Therefore, the prayers of Kunti also indicate the same categorical changes in activities.
Pause for a second. This is a very important statement. Can you elaborate on this statement? What do you think this means?
Well, I was just reading, or I was listening to a class by Chaitanya Charan Prabhu yesterday, and it was about setting the scene for Bhagavad Gita. And he was talking about how basically the context of this is that he's describing how the Bhagavad Gita is described as a yoga sastra. Like when before you chant or after you chant a chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there you say like yoga shastra, fill in the blank, Hari Om or something. But he was making the connection how there was that unification or that yoga, that union between
joining,
yeah,
the Lord and the Lord.
Yeah, there was that physical union between Krishna and Arjuna, but then there was this Vyukta or this
Vyoga.
I think it's like the opposite of like
union. Okay.
I don't know what word he used for it, but V was like the
negation,
precedent of it.
Viraha.
Something like that. Yeah, so there was, so everything was there, like Prabhupada's saying, but there was a separation of interests. But then when that unity of intention and emotion was reinstated, then that's where that yoga happened. So that's like...
Yeah, it's a good point. The persons, the ingredients didn't change, the environments didn't change. What happened is Arjuna performed devotional service. And what was Arjuna's devotional service? What was Arjuna's devotional service that changed him in this case?
Devotional service.
In this case, what was his devotional service that made him a different person?
Well, it was his hearing.
There you go.
Yeah.
It was his hearing. So that's the magic of the hearing process. And that's what's being pointed out here, is that the Arjuna was there, Krishna was there, the battle was there, nothing changed. But Arjuna went from like, I don't want to fight, to I'll do whatever you say because of the hearing process. He heard from Krishna, and therefore his illusions disappeared, his enlightenment came, and yoga happened. He made a union with Krishna, and therefore his opinion changed. He became, as Prabhupada writes here, he became a different person by devotional service, and therefore the prayers of Queen Kunti also indicate the same categorical change in activities. Okay, you want to finish the purport? Tamil the proof?
Srimati Kunti wanted to serve the Lord without diversion, and that was her prayer. This unalloyed devotion is the ultimate goal of life. Our attention is usually diverted to the service of something which is ungodly or not in the program of the Lord. When the program is changed into the service of the Lord, that is to say, when the senses are purified in relation with the service of the Lord, it is called pure unalloyed devotional service. Srimati Kunti Devi wanted that perfection and prayed for it from the Lord.
Beautiful. Pretty self-explanatory there. Okay, let's go to one last verse. Two more on the glories of the hearing process. Fourth canto, chapter 29, verses 39 to 40. 39 to 40. Yeah. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama Hare Hare. You got it? Yatra Bhagavata Rajan.
Yatra Bhagavata Rajan.
Sadhavo Vishadashaya.
Sadhavo Vishadashaya.
Bhagavad Gunanu Katana.
Bhagavad Gunanu Katana.
Shravana Vyagracheta Saha.
Shravana Vyagracheta Saha.
Tasmin Mahan Mukharita Madhubi Charitra.
Tasmin Mahan Karita Madhubik Charita
Piyusha Shesha Sarita Parita Shravanti
Piyusha Shesha Sarita Parita Shravanti
Taye Pibanti Avitrisho Nirpagadha Karnais
Taye Pibanti Avitrisho Nirpagadha Karnais
Tannas Prashanti Asanata Tridbhaya Shokamohaha
Tannas Prashanti Asanata Tridbhaya Shokamoha.
The last line. Let me try this one more time. Tannas prashanti asana tridbhaya Shoka Moha. What's the meter? I thought it was the Govinda meter. Seems a little off. That last syllable is where you need a Hari Parsha Prabhu to be like, oh, this is Rag Malini. Sing it like this. Tanna Sprishanti Yashana Tridbhaya Shokamoha. Okay, translation by. Would you like to read it, Tamadhar Prabhu?
Sure. Translation. My dear king, in the place where pure devotees live, following the rules and regulations, and thus purely conscious and engaged with great eagerness in hearing and chanting the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in that place, if one gets a chance to hear their constant flow of nectar, which is exactly like the waves of a river, one will forget the necessities of life, namely hunger and thirst, and become immune to all kinds of fear, lamentation, and illusion.
What a beautiful verse, isn't it? So it's setting a scene that this is a conversation between, if I remember correctly, I believe Narada Muni is speaking to King Prachina Barishad, I think. Anyways, let's read the purport. Let's read the first paragraph of the purport. I can read this first paragraph. Prabhupada writes, the cultivation of Krishna consciousness is possible where great devotees live together and constantly engage in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. In a holy place like Vrindavan, there are many devotees constantly engaged in chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord. If one gets the chance to hear from pure devotees in such a place, allowing the constant flow of the river of nectar to come from the mouths of pure devotees, then the cultivation of Krishna consciousness becomes very easy. When one is engaged in constantly hearing the glories of the Lord, he certainly rises above the bodily conception. When one is in the bodily conception, he feels the pains of hunger and thirst, fear, lamentation, and illusion. But when one is engaged in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, he transcends the bodily conception of life. So, Jai Jagannath Prabhu, he often shares that when devotees come to him and share that they're struggling in Krishna consciousness, the first question he asks them is, are you hearing? Or how much are you hearing? Or like, what are you hearing? Because he says that's really the root of where our success and our failures begin, is the amount of Harikatha we participate in. And so that's what Prabhupada is also verifying over here, that actually when one lives in a culture, a place where devotees are engaged in hearing and chanting, and one partakes of that nectar, then Krishna consciousness becomes very easy. Your Guru Maharaj, he goes to Govardhan every year for 5.5 hours. They sit in a room, they read Prabhupada's books. These pure devotees are sitting there and they're hearing these narrations from Srila Prabhupada. And every single devotee who goes to Govardhan when he comes back is so enlivened and so enthusiastic to serve and render devotional service. So sometimes I think as practicing devotees, we lose that initial enthusiasm when we first came and we got so excited about Krishna consciousness. Because when we look back, we realize in those days when I sat in a class, I actually heard, I took notes, I was like paying attention. I remember those days because everything was so new. I needed to hear actually, because I didn't know anything. And so I heard very earnestly. And I would take notes and I would try to retain as much as I could because everything was so new and I had such a thirst, like want to know who is Dhruva Maharaj, who is King Prachina Barishad, what are the principles of Krishna consciousness, what is the Sambandha Gyan, what is Abhideya Gyan, what is the difference between Vrindavan and Vaikuntha, what is the different moods of love, what are the gopis, what are the gopas, you know, like how does the Dham manifest in the material world? There's so many deep philosophical questions. How does the mind get purified? What is the power of the name? There's so many things to know about in Krishna consciousness. Then what happens is you hear for a long time, you feel very inspired. Then you come to a point of realizing, you know, when I go to class, I hear the same things over and over again. You know, there's nothing new. I know this already. I know what happens in the fourth canto. I know what happens in the tenth canto. I know how Krishna killed Shankachuda. I know how Krishna killed, you know, like this demon and that demon and defeated Keshi. I know all these stories, you know. And so then one feels a bit, at least I'm just sharing from personal experience, one feels a sense of, I've heard it all. It's not that inspiring anymore. And then I came to a point of realization in my Krishna consciousness that if the hearing process will continue to remain a vibrant part of my spiritual life, I have to find the right people to hear from. Because when you hear from people that we have faith in that, yes, this person is actually more advanced. And also certain personalities are just empowered by the Lord to present that same information in a way that we feel like, am I hearing this for the first time? Like, how have I never heard this point before? Because they have so much realization. Right, and they're combining the wisdom of the scriptures with the fragrance of their own heart's realizations, and it creates this like ecstatic experience that we're just relishing. We don't want to stop hearing from such a person, isn't it? You have this experience, I have this experience. So I think it's every devotee's duty to kind of find the personalities who hearing from whom doesn't get our, like, you know, like, let's say, a forced affair, you know, hearing from whom remains to be this nourishing, life-giving force. And then hearing the Bhagavatam from such saintly souls, then we nourish our hearts and our spiritual practice. And sometimes we may have to just find that person. Sometimes we may have to, like, you know, make time to hear from those personalities in our own, like you're saying, you're hearing lectures by Chaitanya Charitamrita. Wonderful. And then this effect can happen, you know, and oftentimes when devotees don't do this, they struggle in their spiritual life. They think Krishna consciousness doesn't work, the devotees don't treat me nicely. No, it's we haven't participated in the core activity of Krishna consciousness. Some comments on this?
Just to go off of that dynamic of like when you hear something for the first time in Krishna consciousness, then it's very exciting, and then after a while then you get this kind of illusion of like that attitude of, oh, I know that already.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, a point was brought up in a class that I was hearing in Denver, and it was about the Sunday feast, like how it, like he Vaisheshika Prabhu's like opinion on how a Sunday feast program or any like public program should be catered towards. He said the lowest common denominator, where, you know, someone can walk off the street. And he said that devotees don't mind typically hearing, you know, the quote unquote basic philosophy. And he added that little part at the end where he said, especially if they're advanced, they don't mind hearing the basic philosophy. They relish it. Right. And then it reminds me of, I don't know exactly the who's who or the what's what of this pastime, but I just know when Krishna was going to Kurukshetra, or he was visiting some holy place, and there were some sages that were gathered there, and Krishna was speaking what we would consider in our own faulty sort of conception, like basic philosophy, like basically saying, oh yeah, we're not the body and stuff like that. But all the sages were like, you know, very advanced sages too, were very like mind blown, and they're like, wow, this is really interesting.
Lord himself.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, yeah, it's like, it's who you're hearing it from, and then also the qualification of the hearer as well. So you can hear things like, we're not the body and stuff like that, but because your life is enriched with these realizations, you're able to hear these messages with like a refreshed heart and like refreshed like perspective, because you know that realization is nourished. So when you hear that same message that we're not the body, etc., you have deeper realization from it and stuff each time you hear it.
Yeah, ideally, but you know it can get like hackneyed, and that's why a lot of times hearing also depends just on the relationship with the person you're hearing from. Because if one doesn't have some foundation level of respect for that person, or like faith that they have something valuable to share, then anything they say is just going to go. Which is why usually, like when we, you know, like sometimes when we struggle with a devotee or there's some issue, then we don't address them directly because we know that they may not hear it from us. We'll go to like their elders or their mentors, you know, because maybe if it's coming from them, they might pay more attention, you know, because it's all about the relationship. The hearing process is all about the relationship. And when one feels a certain relationship with the speaker, it actually augments our ability to absorb what they have to share. But I also like this point you made about Vaisheshika Prabhu saying that, you know, especially those who are more advanced, they'll appreciate those basic points. Because frankly, it's those basic points that we still haven't fully assimilated. Because if we had assimilated this point that we're not our bodies, then that's already like, you know... So I personally, to be honest, I like a mix of both. I think, yes, we should be able to appreciate the basic points. But then for those who have a bit of an active intelligence, then the speaker's duty is to prepare some content or material that invites those whose intelligence is a little bit more active to feel engaged and like, oh, I'm learning something new and valuable. So I don't want to put all the onus on just the hearers, because it's also the speaker's duty. Prabhupada writes in the first canto, you know those four verses in the second chapter of the first canto? It's describing the process of how bhakti begins with faith, then one hears, then Krishna is established in the heart, then ignorance is destroyed. Like there's a sequence of four verses. So there's one verse in there which oftentimes devotees quote before speaking on the Bhagavatam, and then in that there's a line called Vasudeva Katharuchi. In other words, katha, like ruchi or taste for Vasudev katha is fixed in the heart. So on that verse, when Prabhupada was giving a lecture on that verse, I was listening to it some time ago, and he says, if someone goes away because he doesn't have taste, don't just blame them. It is the fault of the preacher also for not being able to inculcate taste in the hearer. It's also the fault of the preacher. So it's always a two-way street, you know. As if it is our duty to present Krishna consciousness to the world, Prabhupada writes in the first canto again, the preacher has to rack his brain trying to think of novel ways to present the same information but according to time, place, and circumstance in a way that's palatable and entertaining and interesting. Not entertaining is not the right word, but at least something that catches their attention, you know. And generally I've noticed one is able to do that when one himself has taste for the subject matter, right? Like, if I try to sell you on something I myself am not sold out on, you're not going to buy it. You're going to be like, listen, bro, like, I tried this product. It's crap. You know, it's not going to... I can tell you yourself I'm not convinced. You know, and that's when, like, sometimes you meet these fanatical Christians who are just... they're very young in their spiritual practice, so they have to live in this world where they're right and everybody else is wrong. Because if there's even the slight possibility that you're right and they're wrong, it'll shake up their faith, you know. And so they haven't developed a taste for their spiritual practice, but they have the feeling that I'm a Christian, so like I have to prove that I'm a Christian. And but then I've also met mature Christians, people who have like a genuine love for God, and they are very nice to be around because they don't have to feel like they have to convince you, you know. They already have their attachment. They're okay with the fact that you don't agree with them or you don't follow their same tradition. It doesn't bother them, you know. And so again, it's all about, you know, when we practice spiritual life, it's about having a taste for that which we're doing, and only then can we transfer to somebody else. Otherwise, we will run the risk of becoming fanatical or like, you know, immature spiritualists because we're doing a practice that we yet haven't developed a taste for, and therefore we're not going to be able to convince anybody else, you know. So those are my thoughts on this. Any closing remarks from Damodar?
Yeah, going back to the verse from the prayer that Queen Kunti offers to Krishna about the Ganges and how it's flowing towards the ocean and stuff. And so when you think about how the pathway of a river is formed, it's where, you know, I'm sure, you know, I'm no expert in like, you know, geology and all that sort of stuff, but
topography.
What's that?
Topography and geography.
Topography and all that stuff, but I'm under the presumption that there's some sort of like, either there's like a glacier or something that's like slowly moving and it's like creating this pathway, or there's a really nice quote, it's drops a day wear the stone away. So yeah. If you see that, like, you know, near the ocean or near like a river, and what could even just be like a little drop, like throughout the day for years and years and years and years, and you see like it actually starts to wear away the stone, which seems like an impossible task, but in a similar way, that's how that form or that path is created for the river to flow towards the ocean is even if it's just tiny drops a day, but if it's done consistently, then you get that result.
Beautiful, yeah. So let not a day go by when a drop of the Bhagavatam doesn't fall on the stone of our heart, and therefore doesn't get a chance to chip away at some of that stone, so that the pathway of attraction can manifest within our heart. So thank you so much for your wonderful reflections and comments. Made the class worthwhile, actually. People who are listening will appreciate your comments very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. All glories to you.